The Creative Ambitions Podcast. She's an improviser.
She's a martial artist.
And sometimes she's a hangry. Give it up for your host, the amazing Angela Stanton.
Welcome back, everyone, to the first two-part episode with the widely talented Jonathan Anderson. Jonathan is a stand-up comedian, improviser, producer, podcaster, sketch writer, and showrunner. He is best known for his stand-up comedy through his show, Show Me Your Bits, and can also be found on his podcast, Mental Break Pod. During the first half of our conversation, we talk about a festival he just performed at, where he grew up and his religious upbringing, the Pentecostal domination, I don't even know how to say it, school that he went to, different career choices that he considered, what it's like being short, some of the ups and downs that he went through when he first started to perform comedy, how he met his girlfriend, and finally, we basically wrap it up with how his girlfriend is the funniest person in the world. So, yeah, friends, this was a very long recording. You're going to find out reasons why throughout the episode, so I won't spoil too much of it, but I have been looking forward to getting Jonathan on this podcast since, like, basically the very beginning. He has so much to him when it comes to talent, comedic timing, just comedy in general. He's so well-versed and versatile when it comes to the comedy realm. He can go up on stage and perform in a group. He can perform by himself. He makes shows. Like, he's just so well-rounded and a very, very down-to-earth person. So, again, I'm not gonna ruin too much of it, but just, you know, be on the lookout for that second episode or that second part. It's gonna come out next week, and I'm really looking forward to it. As I'm recording this right now, I feel so nervous about it. This is probably the most vulnerable conversation that this podcast has had to this day, which is, yeah, a big reason why I wanted to give it room to breathe and just kind of go with that flow. But I love how open and, like, vulnerable Jonathan is willing to be. I was just so pleasantly happy to have him. And I'm just looking forward to everybody here getting to know just, you know, another really great, talented comedian in this space, in this area, however you want to define it. We're still working on the motto for this podcast, but essentially, comedians. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And here is the first part of my conversation with Jonathan Anderson.
Hello.
What's up, Jonathan?
Hello. I am wonderful.
Yeah? How was your weekend?
Good. We just did the Union Improv Festival, so I am very exhausted, but it was very fun.
Yeah?
And getting to do shows at the Rockwell was dope. And now we're probably going to go back to... We're going to go back to our small Union Theater.
Yeah.
It's going to kind of feel like when you're single and you have a dream that you have a wife and kids.
Yep.
And then you wake up in a twin bed and you're like, oh, fuck.
Really? This is not as satisfying as what I thought.
Yeah. So, but it was great for, like, community building. And then there was people there that, like, offered, psyched out some stuff and Show Me Your Bits some stuff.
For those of you tuning in that don't know Jonathan Anderson, Show Me Your Bits and
Psyched Out.
These are two shows that he runs himself with some very talented comedians. Definitely check that out. You can find him on his Instagram, or you can also just follow my Instagram and get some updates.
I realize saying my shows out loud without people having context for it, they're like, what the... Yeah, so I do Psyched Out and Show Me Your Bits, and that just sounds like you found a crazy person off the street.
Yeah, so when I perform on house teams, like, people that aren't in the theater community, I'll be like, oh, like, I'm not around tonight. And they're like, what are you doing? And instead of being like, oh, I have house teams, I'm like, I'm performing. Just to keep it simple for them.
Yeah, yeah. Because then you have to explain, like, house teams is on Tuesdays, and then what's the show on Wednesday? And then you have to, like, talk for so long.
Yeah.
I hate that. And it's also crazy because, like, when you're at Improv Asylum, you're like, this is the center of the world. And then you go down the street and someone, you're like, oh, I got a show at Improv Asylum. And they're like, what's that? And you're like, this is everything to so many people.
It's everything. If anything, like, I didn't really know about improv when I first came into the space. Like, I knew what improv was, but I didn't really, like, I didn't understand the art form of it to, like, a great extent. If anything, I was like, oh, I'm going to try improv because it seems like a really great stepping stone for comedians and actors. And then I like, fell in love. The moral of what I'm bringing up is Dan Carlin was chatting about you on the last episode.
Sweet, and, sweet boy.
Yeah, the sweetest. And he was saying that it was, like, your first time performing on house teams or just, like, first time being down in the space in general and all the music that's playing.
Mm-hmm. And, the lights. And, yeah, it feels... I think on his episode, he said, I described it as, like, a magic trick.
Yeah.
And it is, but it is also magical. Like, it's a very effective magic trick, and, you know,
it's so helpful.
By the way, I think I've listened to every episode of this podcast.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a fan.
That means a lot.
Yeah. I will sign up for the Patreon.
Whenever I get that out. I really appreciate that. I was telling Jonathan before we started recording, I've been looking forward to doing this episode with him since, like, episode 2. He's got a lot of fun stuff that I'm excited for you guys to get to know about him. But
yeah, that's also why I listen to this podcast, is because I get mentioned a fair amount. So it's a good ego trip for me.
I love that. Yeah, you do get brought up a lot. But all right, let's get into this. Jonathan.
Angela.
We can find a lot of this info, I'm sure, on your podcast. But where were you birthed?
I was birthed Southbridge, Massachusetts. Do you know where that is?
It's in Massachusetts.
That's a great guess. Yeah. Yes, correct. On the first try. It's near Worcester.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, you know, Old Sturbridge Village? Have you heard of that?
No.
That's like they do like a cosplay of like pilgrim shit.
Okay.
That's probably a simple way of describing it. But that's kind of what the area is known for. Other than that, Southbridge is known mostly for like its heroin bus.
Great.
And pretty good food, I think.
Okay, so you grew up around drugs and good rhythms.
Yeah, yeah. Drug maybe, but we were in like a kind of a bad part of the town. The town it has like a lot of things going on, but there was a particular area where we lived called Brookside Terrace, and that was like housing for a lot of people who were just getting like out of rehab or like rehabilitated in some way. So that area felt like it had more drugs than the rest of the town.
Yeah.
But we were like a hardcore Christian family.
Yep.
So it was like I was both sheltered, but also if I stepped outside, you know, it was like I had cool friends.
Yeah.
You know.
I had
drug dealers for friends, and I was just like, well, when you're done selling that H, I'd love to tell you about my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
So you either have, for assumption purposes, you either have like an uptight Catholic or Christian family, or you have Lucy Goose drugs.
Yeah,
on the outside,
and it made it a lot easier to choose Jesus for a long time, because I was just like, well, everyone else I know is, you know, having withdrawals, so and that's how my family was too. Like the part of my family that wasn't Christian was super into seeing God through drugs, so that made it like the contrast was like easier. To be like, wow, the world is crazy.
Yeah. So, did you stay in that area for a while?
Yeah, until I was 22, I think.
Okay. So you're 22 years old. Did you go like the college route of like, did you do community college or did you go to like a university?
No. So I went to a uptight Christian school. That was like Pentecostal.
High school or post?
I went K through 12.
Thank you.
The whole school is filled with like kindergartners to seniors. So yep. It's like you could be a high school kid in the same classroom as like a first grader. It's bizarre. So we would do that in order to like keep us from having outside like influences from the world.
Oh.
Yeah. It was very sheltered, very weird. We had to like, part of your math test was also being able to say a scripture from from memorization.
Math.
Yeah, so you could fail a test if you didn't have your scripture memorized.
Oh my God.
All right, welcome to Christian Math, everyone. I'm Mrs. Spelunkin, and we'll be going over the answers to the math exam from last Friday. Okay, number one. Oh, this was the word problem. Okay, let's see. If Jesus was dead for 3 days and got 47 lashes, then how many holes were nailed into his body? Anyone? Yes, the answer is 6. Not 666, Jonathan! This is Christian math, not the devil's math. Do better.
Yeah, so, like, we would start our day by pledging to the American flag, and then we would pledge to the Christian flag, and then we would pledge to the Bible, and then we would pray, and then we would have like a morning devotion, and then we would start school. So it's like 45 minutes of like programming, and then they would sometimes they would tell us the news, but it was all from like a hardcore, like it was alt-right before it was alt-right. So like the first time I heard of Barack Obama was like, there's a Muslim running for president and he's gonna swear on the Quran if he gets in, and he might, like, it was something like he might, you know, make it illegal to be a Christian. And I was so...
I wish the audience could see my face right now.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
Just
Angela's
like,
giving me, yeah, a lot of, like, her eyes twitching a little bit.
Like, what?
But,
I guess, yeah.
Yes, so I wanted to go to film school after that. But nobody in my life was, like, okay with... Like, and my mom would say Christians can't do comedy. Like, it's just, like, impossible. Even though there are some, like, Christian comedians. Yeah. She knew I didn't want to... do that. Like, I didn't want to be like, ain't Noah crazy, like, it's the story of Noah, good Lord, you know.
Yeah.
That, like, I didn't want to do that stuff.
God forbid those holes get in the boat.
Yeah.
So I
wanted to go to film school, and everyone at that school and at home was telling me to go to like a Christian film school in Oklahoma. I forget the name of it.
Guess it wasn't that important.
Yeah, you can Google it and then enter it later, I guess, in post and make it sound like my voice.
You hear my voice pop up. Oral Roberts University? Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't want to do that. I also didn't want to live in Oklahoma. I knew I kind of wanted to live in a bigger city. Like, New York has always been the goal, but
yeah,
I liked Boston for the few times we would go out there. But I was also just so, like, scared, because it's just like all I know is like this weird Christian world. I don't really know anybody who's really left and like tried to do something like that, you know. Like, there's not even someone who's like filming commercials like in the area.
Yeah.
So I just kind of hung around there, and there was a Christian girl I was sort of seeing at the time, well, dating, and
so holding hands only.
Yeah.
Here's my pinky.
Right, yeah. Maybe, like, an over-the-clothes, like, pat.
Because she got pushed into you. Her friend
asked. Rules around dating were crazy, too. Like, you couldn't just ask a girl on a date. You had to go ask her dad if you could take her on a date. And it was, like, not even, like, asking for a hand in marriage. It was like, can I take her to Applebee's?
Yeah.
It's... So
with your money.
Yeah. So I'm dating that girl. Her parents hated me because I like, as a Christian, I was considered like the bad boy of Christians, because I would say, darn it.
I'm rolling my eyes.
And make jokes like and that they thought were edgy, which and then I had my friends who like lived in Southbridge who were just like, this guy's a dork. So I, in both worlds, I was like, lame and edgy at the same time.
You were an awkward asshole.
Yeah. That's the name of my first Netflix special.
Okay, question number two. What does the Father plus the Son plus the Holy Spirit equal to? Anyone? Anyone? This was a toughie. It was a trick question because the limit does not exist, okay? There was no beginning or end to God. And no, Jonathan, it does not equal one big family reunion. One more wisecrack out of you and you're going to the priest's office.
So I am wanting to get like a respectable job so that they will like me.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, like my mom's also telling me like, you got to get a job. Like, we weren't well off financially, so the idea of going to college and, you know, being in serious debt for something I knew I didn't really want to do was, that idea was upsetting to me, so.
I'm that person.
Yeah. So I was like, I'll go to community college, and I like the idea of being a firefighter. I was like, that's a respectable job. It's like, it's kind of badass. It's crazy cool hours. A lot of times you're just sitting around watching movies until like then an alarm goes off and then you have to be in like game mode.
Yeah, I heard firefighters only have like 3 12-hour shifts and then they're on call the rest of whatever they pick up or something like that.
Yeah, and in my hometown, because like it's pretty small, there's not like a lot of fires, so you are an EMT as well. And then so you can pick up EMT hours like in Worcester if you wanted to.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I was like, I'll do that. I went to community college for, no joke, fire science.
Yeah, yeah. I dated somebody that did that.
And it sounds like I'm just going to college to understand how fire works. But yeah. it's more you getting a degree to be an EMT and to, like, learn, I guess, it's just to have, like, a degree so that you can become a fire chief someday if you wanted to, basically.
They try to give you as much as possible so you have, like, the understanding of, like, what it is that's going on, essentially.
Right. And even community college was, like, a weird adjustment going from, like, my weird school to that, to, like, just a regular classroom.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really enjoying it. I didn't feel like I was learning that much.
Okay.
And I was taking like psychology 101 and it was like a get to know you questionnaire thing.
Yeah.
And they were like, what is your career goal? And everyone else who was in the class put something that was related to their degree. Like if you were, you know, going for, political science, it was to be like on like the mayor or whatever political science people want to do.
Totally.
I put down like, I'm studying to be an EMT. My dream job, stand-up comedian. And the person who ran the class was like, why would you put that?
Why are you here?
Why would you put that?
They're like, do you need to talk to a guidance counselor about attention seeking? Like, are you all right?
Yeah. Do you want to do 5 minutes in front of the class? Will that get that out of your system?
My 3-year-old wrote this down the other day.
Okay. He wants to be Eddie Murphy. That's cute. So I dropped out. I was taking my EMT, I don't know, the graduation thing, your EMT test, then you can be an EMT. And while I was taking the test, I was like, I don't want to do this. And I realized something that a lot of the people who were studying to be firefighters and EMTs, they loved it. And a lot of times their dad was a firefighter. Their mom was worked in an emergency room, that sort of thing. It was like kind
they had
of
like
more
an influence.
Yeah, and they just were more passionate about it. And I was just like, you know, it seems badass. Like that's not like the attitude a firefighter should have. Also, if a firefighter was coming to save me and he was 5'8", I would be a little pissed. I would just be like, I just say my prayers.
So because I am a little crazy in how I deal with my life. I do martial arts. I have a lot of respect for short people now. Like, I used to not respect myself. I'm 5'4". I mean, as a female, that's average. But I still have, like, a lot of tall... I went to a concert. Do you know Tycho?
I don't think so.
So, he's like this... I hate that I'm using this word. Shout out Nate Spina, because I hate this word because of the way that we talked about it. He's got like ambient kind of music.
Sure.
Just like instrumental, but It's very beep boop boppy.
Yeah, very vibey.
Yeah, his music is usually in a lot of the background in indie films.
Sure.
Why was I bringing this up?
Short people.
Short people.
You were at a concert.
And I was at this concert, and I was so... Being at this concert, I was so short. I literally took a video of some of the performers, or like some of the performance, like through people's arms when they were throwing them up in the air.
Yeah.
Like whatever pocket.
Right, right.
Like,
do people throw their hands in the air for ambient music?
Some of them did at some points. Like, there were a lot of drops, like, midway through the songs that it was, like, a crazy light show. Yeah, people were on something, but
right,
we had
yeah.
a few waivers.
It was a Southbridge concert, yeah.
Yeah, we had a few waivers. It was at Royale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, concert standing room at concerts, tough for short people.
Yeah, they can be so fun. But
they make me want to learn martial arts so I could just, like, beat up all the tall people and get to the front.
Just pick up the ankle.
I don't even know what that means, but I'm going to do it.
Just like lift the ankle up and push them over. Teeter-totter, bye.
Is that a martial arts move?
In a very comedic sense, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that's a Little Rascals move. But.
Yeah. People, when I tell them that I do martial arts, the funniest thing I've ever heard somebody say is, like, if I'm mad about something, they're like, sweep his leg out, sweep the leg. And I'm like, that's not my move because I'm super short, but I'll pick up the ankle.
I'll bite and scratch him. Where are you at with martial arts? Like, if I tried to throw a punch at you, would you do like a Jason Bourne move on me?
I don't do stand up boxing because I do jiu-jitsu. Like, if you were to like throw a punch at me, I would probably just like run backwards and then try to find a way
to get me on the ground.
Yeah, like I would just look for like openings and mistakes that you might make in your movements or your just overall character, whatever.
I make a lot of mistakes with my character.
You'll find
an alley.
You can find a lot of advantage points with very aggressive people when they first start because they're all charged. They're
right.
not.
It's like why Khabib fucks up McGregor.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so interesting, like, the way that the mind really influences the way that people perform, but I've been doing martial arts for at least 12 years. Jiu-jitsu has been something that, like, though I still practice it, I can't really say that I'm, like, quote-unquote studying it right now. Mm. I would say I'm kind of regressing with the lack of training that I've been doing. Like, I'm so proud of it. I love that I did something outside of the box. And
yeah, what made you do it? Just being short?
I was honestly just, like, afraid for myself.
Sure.
Just, like, in general. I felt like I was a very easily approached person, but there were things that, like, some people would say or do, and I would, like, stand up for myself, and they would just start, like, verbally attacking me. And
not anymore.
No. No. Now I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
See what I do with your ankle.
No, what's better than a verbal attack? A physical one.
Yeah.
That's probably a very unhealthy thing to say. But it's effective. And I thought about doing it a while ago, but I really have a thing with, like, this is such a not cool thing to say, but I like other people's sweat and, like, being on something about touching other people that much.
Yep.
Also physical pain.
Yes.
And ouchies and stuff like that. Was it a deterrent for me?
So it's very grounding for me to do martial arts because of that.
This is officially an episode of Joe Rogan.
Yes. Welcome. We are in a blue state. I will say, I like Joe Rogan as a martial artist. Everything else, I'm kind of like, okay.
I only like his politics.
Really?
No.
I was about to say, I was like, wait.
Your eyes started twitching again.
I was like, we work in the theater. Do you have friends that... No, I really do like Joe Rogan is a martial artist. I actually learned Taekwondo through the affiliation, in a sense, that he came from. Mm-hmm. Like, the person that taught him gave me a belt.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I talk about this on the Griff Monica podcast. Go check it out. But that was a really cool thing to be a part of because I didn't realize how it's not condensed. It's more so like in the comedic world, like to kind of correlate the two thoughts. Something that I found in the comedic world that was just, like, beautiful to me. I didn't realize that so many great comedians were so close in this kind of, like, area. Like, I was able to meet Tony V, and Tony V works as, like, a stand-up teacher. He did work as a stand-up teacher, and he opened for Bill Burr.
Yeah, he's like a very prominent stand-up in Boston.
Yeah, and I was at the Bill Burr show that he opened up for at Fenway, and when I took class with him and I found out that he was there, I was just like, oh, like, this makes sense. Like, I'm stepping into, like, a world where I can pinpoint people that are huge influences to me. In a certain extent, I can't say Joe Rogan's like a huge influence to me, but I did really like that there was a correlation between who I was learning from and who he was learning from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of stand-ups who do jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, and I think there could be, like, my one and only stand-up bit is on jiu-jitsu, and it could be a lot better, but, like, I don't think a lot of people are really talking about it in a comedic sense that I've heard. What I was basically trying to say is having that kind of, like, professionalism, in a sense, be accessible in a setting like that, like, mm-hmm. one that I really loved. I was, like, basically, like, pieces of me were finally, like, coming to, or, like, coming together.
Mm-hmm. That was lovely.
Yeah, I was just thinking just about
like a deep, let's just take a deep breath.
Yeah, I was like,
it's all coming together.
I was like, are we on mental break pod? Like,
yeah. Breaking you down. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So I was short firefighter, right?
Yeah, that's short firefighter.
So then I drop out of community college.
Yep.
And I'm like, because I get a good job. And I am like working third shift at this horrible company.
So you got a good job at a horrible company. Great.
Right. Good. Well, good paying. And I was just like, it's so much better than I'll be making as a firefighter. And like, I'll just save up some money and then I'll move to Boston, maybe.
Is this sarcasm?
No.
Okay. I couldn't tell. Because you were like, terrible job, pays really good. And I was like...
Yeah. Oh, no, it's for real.
Okay,
It's a third shift job. So it's already in my hometown, a good paying job. And then you work third shift and then you get that plus 15% on top of it.
Yep.
So it's a good paying job, but it's the people are treated terribly. And it had, like, mandatory overtime, which I think is just kind of, like, modern slavery.
Yeah.
But there's mandatory overtime, and I'm working third shift 6 nights a week. So I'm, like, not seeing my friends as much.
You're not
And I'm, like, my sleep is horrible. So I'm not, like, making any steps towards doing comedy. And I'm, like, such a anxious mess at this time that I'm like, I can't even get the guts up to go try stand up.
Yeah.
And I'm like sleep deprived. So I was like very depressed for about 2 years because it's like this, I know the pursuit of this is the only thing that's going to satisfy me, but I don't have the guts to do it.
Yeah.
So it was like, I kind of just can't do anything. It just led to a lot of self-hatred. So I was like very depressed and even suicidal for a couple of years. So I didn't really make any progress there. I saved up some money, but I never had the time to spend it. I didn't have friends, really, because I was no longer a Christian at this point, so I lost all my Christian friends.
Aww.
And then I didn't, like, go to college, really, so I didn't have... I had, like, roughly 3 or 4 friends. And...
The shooters. Yeah, shooter uppers.
Yeah. No, these were just alcoholics.
Name's Dale.
So I eventually went to a therapist, and I even went to a hypnotherapist to get rid of my stage fright.
Yeah.
I don't think it worked, but
yeah.
But I do go on stage now, so it's like it. Maybe I should be giving her credit. I don't know.
Maybe it just didn't register in the way that you wanted it to mentally.
Yeah, I thought it wasn't like a... I was hoping like a switch would be flipped and then I'd all of a sudden not care about what people thought about me whatsoever. But it didn't work that way. Therapy helped a lot though, because I was dealing with a lot of the religious stuff in therapy and realizing how much just I was programmed for self-hatred, essentially.
Okay, question number 3. What is the most important math scripture from the Bible? It was Corinthians 12:9. Okay, repeat after me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. That's right. God is enough. All right? We don't need to know the Pythagorean theorem when we have God. No. Jonathan, is that a calculator in your pocket? Are you kidding me right now? No, I will not tolerate this in my Christian math classroom. Now say three Hail Marys, all right? Because that was a sin.
That was what was leading not only, like, my fear of, like, these people will judge me and I'll... the thoughts I feel about myself, the bad thoughts I feel about myself, I'll see reflected in their faces of, like, we don't like this guy. We don't think he's funny. And then, on the other hand, the only thing that was, like, I felt like was redeeming about myself was, like, I'm funny. And then if I go and then I bomb, I don't even have that. You know what I mean? So it's just, like, it was a lot of warped thinking.
Yeah.
And therapy helped me not take it so seriously.
Yes.
And it's really just, like, it's just you saying jokes into a microphone.
Yeah, this is,
I said, I just packed a lot into that.
No, my heart started racing a little bit because I'm going to get vulnerable too. I'm kind of going through this right now. I was going to go into nursing, and I have a public health degree. And something that I think about from Sam Carty's episode one, is she was talking about how she, when she would get a promotion at a job that she didn't really like, she'd be like, great, like, I hit this milestone, but I'm not really, like, happy about it. Like, I have to keep doing this, and other people seem so happy about it. Like, what is going on? I worked at a retail place, the vitamin shop, and then left that for a construction job, then left that because it was just, like, I was working as an usher by the time that I was, like, on the end skirt of working as a construction person. But when I finally started to come into this space more, like, I realized a lot of the things that you kind of, you know, just brought up. I loved comedy. It's been this not, like, silent goal or, like, silent dream of mine, because I have talked to, you know, closest friends about it. But I think when I finally started to step into it, I had... I don't know why I'm, like, so nervous. I wonder if, no, like, people are going to be able to pick up on this.
No, it's okay.
But when I...
If we don't both cry by the end of the episode, it is a failure.
That's so. Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, when I finally started to step into this space, I realized that I was stepping into myself. And there was a lot of beauty in that at first, because I didn't really know anybody. I didn't really feel... like, nervous to be judged in a sense. And I don't think anybody that I've worked with down here really judges me. I think, if anything, I have really great friends that just want to see me get better and more comfortable on stage. But as of lately, I've started to notice that, like, as I'm coming into myself, there's, like, so much self-hate and ridicule and just craziness that is kind of coming up because of it. Yeah, just, like, being comfortable stepping into yourself takes time.
Yeah.
Especially when you've been essentially programmed to hate yourself.
Right. And, like, and it's not like hypnotherapy where you, or, like, you have a great set. You could have 8 great sets in a row.
Yeah.
And then you could have a bad one, or even sometimes the great sets won't feel as fulfilling because maybe you didn't kill as hard as you wanted to, or you tried a new bit.
Yeah.
Like, I almost always, like, can't sleep after a stand-up set, even when I kill, because I think of the one, like, quip or joke that didn't get anything or didn't get enough. So
yeah,
it's just, like, constantly... you have to constantly criticize yourself to get better at it, too, so that it just sets you up for, like, a vulnerable thing. You're also trying to get stuff. Like, if you don't get cast on something, then you're like, is it because I'm this way? Is it, you know, then you start have to look at, like, maybe if I didn't have a double chin, I'd be on this cast or whatever. Like, you just, then it just forces you to be, like, constantly taking assessment of yourself and, like, putting blame on yourself. And some stuff you can't control. It's not really fair to yourself. And a lot of casting decisions are just by, like, that's just one older person's perspective.
Yeah.
Or preference.
I totally get that. And I think, like, I give a lot of credit to the people that can go out there and audition and just be like, yeah, I didn't make it, but I learned something from it.
Yeah. That, I mean, that sometimes that does come with
reps.
Yeah. It's just like you audition enough and then you're like, well, you just get better at auditioning.
Yeah.
It's same with stand up. It you will be less nervous the more you do it. Improv, auditioning, acting, whatever it is, you just kind of like, you'll get more comfortable.
Yeah.
Still not getting it sucks, but when you can do an audition and you're like, well, that's how I do improv.
Yeah.
Like, because when you first do auditions, you're doing like improv you think they want. You're like, I need to show that I can do these things. I need to not be too inappropriate. Once you stop caring and you're just like yourself, that's usually when you get things and you're just like, I'm going to do what I want here.
And yeah, that was kind of crazy for me during my first couple of auditions for house teams. I think I was just so nervous, or I don't know, maybe the cast needed to kind of get to know me more, but I didn't make house teams for my first two auditions. And I remember being like, because I was like still new and just ignorant and kind of miss that sometimes because I didn't have as many rules.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I don't even care about those first two auditions. It's every time I've made house teams since then, I'm like, why? Like, all I did was say yeah and make a face, and they took me. Those are kind of some of those moments where I am being like more authentic to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think the point I'm trying to bring up is I find that auditions, at least for house teams, don't make me question my worth.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything that comes after when I have been casted. I'm like, what do you mean I have to show you my worth now? What do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I get nervous about, like, growing.
Yeah. And you're always going to want more, too. I used to...
Always.
I used to be like, if I could just be on house teams regularly, like, that would be enough. And then you get on house teams and you're like, I need more.
Yeah.
And ultimately, my goal was to, like, just be booked regularly in Boston. And, I mean, I have the big dreams of, like, you know, I think everybody who does improv wants to be on SNL on some level.
Yeah.
Even if they talk about how not cool it is anymore. So, like, I had those big goals, but realistically, it was like, if I can just be booked doing stand-up and sometimes improv in Boston, then I'll be satisfied.
Yeah.
And now I have that, and I'm like, I should be booked more.
You should be booked more.
Well, I appreciate that. I was sort of making a joke, but I sort of meant it as well.
No, I mean, I was telling everybody I've been looking forward to this episode since, yeah, Kelly Moon's when I did the bits with you. But I think you're extremely, extremely talented. And when I do get to have the time to, like, get to know you a little bit more, I'm like, oh, this is great. This is somebody that essentially I do look up to because you have four inches on me.
She means penis size.
Sorry, Maddie.
First of all, this is my favorite portion of the show so far. Thank you for the compliments.
Of course.
I also feel like this episode I thought was going to be linear, and we're just like, this is Pulp Fiction, baby.
We're all over the place. There's a thought that I have to go back to at some point.
Yeah. We were somewhere in the story. We were talking about was I was suicidal, I think.
Suicidal, and then, yeah, I started to open up about some stuff.
Yeah. So I didn't kill myself, spoiler.
Whoa.
And then after I was going to therapy a while, I would take the bus out to Boston from Worcester, and I would do, like, an open mic. It was not a smart plan. It was, like, 3 hours of traveling to do 5 minutes of stand-up.
Yeah.
But the first time I did it and I got a laugh, I was like, I'm going to come back, you know? And I did that a few times. I'm going to come. Yeah. I would jerk off on the bus ride home.
Yeah.
And
I'm getting a pet.
I started making plans to, like, okay, I should move to Boston. And pretty much everyone in my life was like, don't do it. Because not a lot of people leave their hometown.
Where you're
from? In that hometown. Yeah. It's just like kind of all that. Yeah. It's like, where are you going to get heroin? And
sticking out of his arm.
Now, firefighting isn't just watching movies waiting for something to happen, like everyone thinks. It's a stressful job. For example, I'm in charge of chili night every other Thursday. It's a lot of work. You have to make sure you have the right amount of paprika, garlic, cayenne, and of course, cumin. If you overdo it, boom, chili's ruined. Okay, and you know, many people make the mistake of putting the beans right in. No, you gotta rinse your beans beforehand to remove the excess salt and starches. So I take the fire hose and give them a nice once-over. The boys and I like to eat our chili while watching a nice rom-com. Okay, sue us. We don't just like fire. We like a fiery romance, too. I can't let the other guys catch me crying, though. That's when I spray myself down with the fire hose, so my whole body is wet and not just my eyes. Then we have to clean up, which takes forever. All those dishes and pots and pans, forget about it. I ain't hand washing. I make the boys go down the pole with a dish one by one, and I, you guessed it, spray them with the fire hose. Oh no, that's the fire bell. I've been waiting for something like this to happen all month. See you next chili night.
So then I think at like 23, which is 6 years ago now, I moved to Boston, and I'm still nervous as shit doing, so like I'm living in Boston, but I'm still like figuring out a city is tough, and figuring out like what open mics to go to, and so I'm still nervous, so I'm not doing it as frequently as I would like.
Okay.
And then my roommate said to me that he does like an improv. He goes to an improv show every Thursday.
Okay.
That's what he said. He was a Brazilian doctor. So he was just like, he was like studying to be a doctor. And he was like, it's just to, you know, loosen up, have some fun.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'd go watch that. I had seen Improv Asylum with me and my friends went when I was like 19.
Okay.
And I saw like.
With Christians?
No. These were my four non-Christian friends.
Amazing.
And
shout out to you all.
Yeah. Thank you. And I saw Improv Asylum show, and it was like Kelly Dooley. I want to say Griff was on. Oh. Kagi, okay. Kira, McGregor.
Kira and Kagi were they on the same?
Yeah, they were on the same main stage. I don't know if they were lovers at the time, but I think they.
Shout out.
I felt like they had a chemistry. At the time that I was like, I think they're dating.
Okay.
Dooley was my favorite. And
she's so talented.
Yeah, she's insanely good at improv.
Yeah.
And I thought it was awesome. It was the magic trick, you know. But I was also like, I could never do that. I'm definitely more of a stand-up. I couldn't think of things on the fly like that. But I went to my friend's show, and it was actually not a show. It was a jam.
Okay.
So then I went there to watch, and they made me like join in and do improv.
Okay.
And I was like, we did like freeze tag.
Yeah.
At first, and I did it, and I was like pretty instantly like good at it.
Okay.
For to some level. I like, obviously, if I were to watch it now, I'd be like, that sucks and is probably hacky.
Yeah.
But I wasn't nervous like I thought I'd be when it was happening.
Yeah.
I'm like nervous before I did improv, but when the improv scene started, I was like completely calm and like could think fast. So once I did that, I was like, okay, that's awesome. Maybe I'll come back.
I just came.
Yeah, I just came. I'm going to jerk off on the car ride home. And I just kept going back to that thing. So it was like doing improv once a week and then like stand up once or twice a week. And then the pandemic happened.
Okay.
So then I had to take a long break, but at that place, I had met Chris Morin, who is in Psyched Out and all the comedy stuff we do
together. Yeah, he's on House Teams. I've performed with him. Shout out, Chris.
But,
you're the best.
Yeah, me and him became good friends, and I became became good friends with a lot of people at that improv jam.
Okay.
And so when I when the pandemic happened, me and Chris started making sketches together just to like have something to do.
Yeah.
So then we like kind of became a group.
What was it? The Yummy Yummy Something?
No, that's a great name though. The Yummy Yummy Something. You should write that down.
It's like Yummy Yummy Talkie or something.
Yummy Yummy Talkie.
It's something Chris did on.
Oh, the Yummy King.
That's
yes,
it.
Yes.
Like, Yummy Yummy yeah. What?
Yeah. The Yummy King is one of our sketches. Yeah, it's Chris putting horrible foods together while also trying to do some self-help. It's
so funny.
Hilarious. But yeah, we started doing sketches together, and when the pandemic was ending, I auditioned for, I think I auditioned for NXT before I auditioned for House Teams, which is absolutely crazy.
I actually love that for you.
But they weren't having House Teams, and they were just like, we're auditioning. It was like open casting. Anybody can come audition.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, I'll just try to, like, get good at auditioning.
Yeah.
And I went, and knowing fully well, no chance of getting this. There was, like, obviously a lot of people there that, like, had been on House. And then when they made us go around and say how long they were on House Teams, and I had to be like, I was on level 4 before the pandemic or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And, like, Rhett was there, Madison, Gillis, Steph Simon. So it was, like, all people who are on main stage now were at this audition. So
they, I'm sure that it was, like, probably Madison and Rhett that made it. Or probably
yeah,
Madison.
Yeah, Madison,
first.
Steph, Reddit. Reddit.
Reddit.
Reddit. Rhett is.
Rhett, Reddit.
If Reddit was a person, it'd be Rhett.
Yeah,
and
also be.
And, yeah, so, but I met Maddie at that audition. And that obviously
shout out Madeline
changed the course of my life. So, but I had met her and I kind of like, we had kind of said like a couple things to each other, like, you're really funny.
Yeah.
And the audition overall was pretty fun. Like, I was probably like nervous as shit, but
yeah,
like, was representative
yeah.
of my usual improv. And I thought, okay, if this girl's in the lobby afterwards, I'll ask for her number.
Yeah.
But then, because my girlfriend is so socially anxious, she left right away afterwards. And
girlfriend now, yeah. Let's say.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Not at the time. In my mind, maybe she was my girlfriend already. But, and I thought, like, well, I'll never see her again.
Yeah.
And then a few months went by. They had auditions for House Teams, and I auditioned for that. And got it. And I was so hyped. Like, that was when I was like, House Teams is the ultimate goal.
It's my life.
Yeah.
My Lord and Savior.
Yeah, that was my new Jesus.
Yeah.
And our first rehearsal, Maddie walked in. And, oh, I should say, I was like, I had dated people at the other improv thing. My improv jam
okay.
thing. And it was just like so annoying to date somebody where you were also trying to do comedy.
Yeah.
And it's just like it causes drama. And I was very determined to like, I'm going to not date anybody on House Teams at Improv Asylum.
Yeah.
But then when Maddie walked in, I was like, I'll date one and then that's it.
One and done.
And so far, that's held up.
Yeah. So, you guys are still together. How long have you been together?
It's going to be 3 years in like 2 weeks.
Congrats. That's
something like that.
Yeah, Madeline is awesome. Shout out again. Madeline is somebody that I find to be, and I don't mean this in like any disrespectful way whatsoever to anybody, but Madeline I find to be like the most professional.
Member. She is. She's also like worked corporate jobs, so she has like a strong sense of like we should treat this like
a
job
yeah.
and like, you know, meet every deadline. I'm much less like that.
Yeah.
I have some senses of that when it's like my project. I can be very like, this is a business about psyched out or show me your bits.
Yeah.
But if I'm just like a cast member, I don't have it as much as Maddie does with like, she's so regimented too.
She's great. I wish I talked to her more, but I think if anything, like, I naturally always bring up the show Gilmore Girls with her, and we've already talked about
yeah.
Gilmore Girls like 3 to 7 times. It's like every time I would see her, especially when I first started working as a manager, I'd be like, so, you know, I'm not really a big fan of Lorelai anymore. And she's like, what? And then I caught myself just like naturally bringing that up to her every time. And I was like, I need something better to talk about than just the show that came out.
I probably talked about Gilmore Girls with her less times than that.
Yes.
So you're really saving me there.
Really pushing it.
Yeah. Yeah, she does love Gilmore Girls. And she does kind of recap the drama to me, but I just have no idea what's going on.
With Gilmore Girls?
I also just don't understand why the daughter's delivery is that way. Like, it's like she's just barely opening her mouth the whole time.
I know. I think it's supposed to show a good girl come out of a bad but good girl situation.
Sure. It seems spectrum-y.
Yep.
Can you say that?
Yep.
It's a little spectrum-y.
And kudos to those that are on it.
On the spectrum.
Because they're smart.
Shout out. Yeah, shout out to all of our autistic fans.
I think I'm one of them.
I think I'm on the, yeah. I am kind of on the spectrum.
I really do. Sometimes I can't make eye contact with people because I haven't slept.
Oh, terrible. Oh, slept?
Yeah. I'm like, guys, I'm really insecure. Because
I really can't make eye contact with people until I've been friends with them for roughly a year.
I just won't talk to them.
Yeah, that makes it easier.
I'll just act like I'll give you a smile, but then kind of like what you just did, like I'll just look down. I'll be like.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the first part of my conversation with Jonathan. So because this is a two-part episode, the next half is going to be released on December 10th. That is Tuesday, December 10th, my friends. In the meantime, upcoming shows for Jonathan. You can catch him in the Psyched Out show that will be held at Deep Cuts in Medford, Mass. On Thursday, December 5th, show starts at 8 p.m., doors open at 7. And the other show that he has coming up is Show Me Your Bits, which is on December 20th at Arts of the Armory in Somerville. And I'll link all of this in the description below for those of you that are listening. I do highly recommend that you check them out, though, because they're amazing. All right, that's all I got for you today, my friends. Music was produced by Henry Loveland. Character bits were done by Kelly Moon. Intro was done by Alex Tomorrow. Find out more places to find Jonathan, Kelly, Henry, and Alex in the description below. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next week for part two with Jonathan on the Creative Ambitions podcast.
And this is where we put another Kelly Moon bit. Then we come back to Big Bowl.